Hello everyone and welcome back to the Put Your Foot On It podcast with me, Jack Guthrie. We have Lewis Blackmore. Hello Lewis.
Hello everyone.
We've got Harrison Lane. Hello Harrison.
Hello everyone.
And Sam Clark. Hello Sam.
Hello guys.
Today we're going to be talking about the best, worst transfers of the season, as well as the transfer bans that have been going on over the past couple of years, especially with the recent Chelsea transfer ban that's gone over the past couple of weeks. As well as that, obviously, with the stuff that's happened over the weekend, we're going to be talking about the fan interactions and altercations with players. So, for example, we'll be talking about the Jack Grealish situation and our views on players and fans having altercations on the pitch. So, for today's podcast, we are going to start off with all the transfers that have happened this season. So, guys, in your opinions, who do you think has been the overall best transfer for this Premier League season?
Well, I mean, there's been plenty of big signings. I'd say if you're looking at not-so-good teams, as in the mediocre ones, best players, probably looking at Ricardo Pereira for Leicester.
Shout.
That is a shout.
I think, I mean, at right-back, he's been unbelievable all season and being able to push forward into the right wing slot.
He's been a bit of a game changer, really, hasn't he, for them? His work rate's just unbelievable. He's up and down that wing all the time, but he's attacking and quite good defensively, to be fair, as well. So
yeah.
I think he's quite like the modern day right back, isn't he? So
and he's popped up a few times. Like he scored a few goals, didn't he, for Leicester as well?
That's been a cracking signing, to be fair.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, he's been one of those players that when Leicester won the league based on basically what was counter attacking football, having two fullbacks in Danny Simpson and Mark Albrighton that would get up the pitch, I think he's only added to that.
Yeah.
He fits that team quite well. You know,
his
traits like match that sort of play style. Absolutely.
Because he's got the pace as well. Leicester love that sort of pacey sort of player.
Attacking style player,
Yeah,
that's perfect, really.
As well as being a defensive player, he's also shown he's a very good creative player.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
He links up really, really well with, I think, usually on the right you've got Rashid Gazelle.
With like the wing backs.
Anything, yeah.
With the wing back situation now, he is just the modern wing back.
Yeah, he is what you want from
a
He will hit the byline every time you want him to. He will
exactly.
get beyond that left back and he will put a ball in the middle.
And you know he'll get back and defend.
Yeah. In my opinion as well, in other teams, maybe Brighton, I know they're not having the best season, but in terms of like the way that Brighton play and how we can improve under playing for Brighton is that Bissouma? He's been he's been good in FA Cup more than the Premier League, but he's been the sort of player that Brighton need. He can defend and he does start attacks, but obviously because
he's been that sort of outlet. He's been the guy to start everything that's pretty much gone well for them. So like you said with the FA Cup, they've had some very very good results. And a lot of that play seems to have gone through him.
He's been the highlight player for most of their games, really. And they're in the next round already, so they're getting close to the semi-finals and the finals.
Even though they're not having the best run in the Premier League.
Yeah, exactly.
I think if we carry on talking about bottom half teams, I think West Ham are a shout. I think Jack Wilshere, at the start of the season, was definitely a good player for them, but he fell off with the injuries.
He's massively fallen off.
In my opinion, I think he's going to retire soon.
He's just very injury prone, you know.
He has to.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Because have you heard recently that Emmanuel Frimpong?
He's
27.
27,
and he had to retire through his injuries. I think that would be a Jack Wilshere thing. Like, there's no doubt that he's
and
a quality
as
player.
Well.
That's another one,
And ironically, both former Arsenal players, just like Jack Wilshere. So maybe that says something about their medical and
possibly,
physio department.
Yeah. What do you think, Lewis? Who do you think's been a good signing?
I can't think of anyone now.
I think coming back to West Ham, I think someone like Felipe Anderson is someone that has massively
he's completely changed
that
West Ham
team. I think when they got Marko Arnautovic, you could tell that he was the guy that they needed to build a team around.
Yeah.
He was popping up, scoring loads of goals, getting loads of assists. He just needed better quality players around him because Antonio had loads of injuries and was moved in all sorts of different positions.
He's 1 minute he's in defence, 1 minute he's in attack.
Exactly. So bringing someone like Felipe Anderson, who's got the technical ability to partner with him so well,
yeah,
and
absolutely.
Not only get assists but provide massive, massive worldy goals.
Yeah,
I think he's been a massive, massive player, and I'd arguably say he's probably been the best signing or the best value for money signing.
Yeah, possibly
value for money, 100%. Because I mean,
they paid something like over 40 million for him, but I think
he's produced really.
I think they're just about in the top half of the table, which I think is better than last season. But he has definitely been someone that
he's improved them.
You take him out of that team. West Ham are a lot lower down the table.
He is someone 100%. That can control the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, the way they say currently about Chelsea with Hazard being their game changer, he's the player for that team. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So also in terms of like centre mids and defensive mids and stuff, I'd say Lucas Torreira, for his age, coming from the style of football that he has before, playing for Arsenal, I think he's fitting quite well for them.
Yeah.
He's a sort of player that they need to protect the defence.
Moving from the Serie A, which is more of a technical league, to the physicality of the Premier League.
Because he's despite, only small.
Yeah, he's not a massive physical presence like a Nemanja Matic or someone like that, but he has done very well whenever he's played. And I don't think he's been played enough under Unai Emery. And you see the young players like Guendouzi getting played. But whenever Torreira's come into that team, similarly to Bissouma, he's been that outlet, that guy that starts the attacks, that guy that gets back and defends.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, they talk about, Arsenal fans have always gone on about, they need that Vieira replacement.
Exactly.
I'm 100% not comparing Torreira to Vieira, but he is definitely the sort of player that Arsenal needed for this amount of time.
If they're not signing centre backs and stuff, he's the player they need to protect the defence, basically.
Yeah, because they've had players like we already talked about,
Kante.
Jack Wilshere and Ramsey, but they were always more attacking. Mm. But getting someone who's more defensively minded, like Torreira, but with good technical ability going forward, I think that's something that massively will help them.
And one more player that I think is from being in the Championship to coming up into the Prem, who's made a difference, who's been scoring goals, creating goals, and shown loads of confidence, is David Brooks.
Oh yeah, David Brooks.
He's been quality for Bournemouth.
For his age
season.
As well.
I mean, what is he? He's like
21. And he's really made an impact to that team, like almost immediately.
Yeah. With the fact that they've had Callum Wilson missing again for parts of the season, for that season again, I mean, it's the usual thing for Callum Wilson now. But David Brooks has really shone, working well with Murphy, King up top, and then he links really well with Jefferson Lerma in the middle.
He has the pace for the counter-attacks that Bournemouth have, and he doesn't only counter-attack with them, he goes past the strikers because he's into playing with them. I just think he's probably the most improved player and transfer for this season, in my opinion. I think he's the standout for me.
Also, another one I'd like to throw in the mix. I know you asked me earlier. I've thought of one now.
Yeah, nice.
I thought of Fabinho at Liverpool. I think he's just added that defensive midfielder position that, although they've got Henderson and arguably Keita in that position, but I think Fabinho has really made it his own, you know?
And that was a good comparison between Fabinho and Keita because they both got signed. They were
both
signed
summer transfers,
And they were expecting effectively Keita to be the bigger signing, really.
Yeah.
And Keita's not had much of an impact or even a place.
He hasn't really had much
of
a sniff in that Liverpool team.
Fabinho's been the one there. And Fabinho's also been playing at centre back as well when they've had the injury problems at
the
back.
He's had to drop back. Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's been a few players this season that have been signed that have actually put
really
a shift in.
They've really boosted that Liverpool team, especially now they've got Champions League as well, you know. He can sort of step into both of those.
What Klopp did in the last couple of transfer windows was really smart because he already knew he had a very, very good attack in Mane, Firmino and Salah. And he already had a really solid defence with good young players coming through like Trent Alexander-Arnold and getting in Andy Robertson. What he's gone and done is made sure that he solidified the whole team across the board, because another one that I'd also throw into the mix is Alisson.
Yeah.
Who I think he's got the most
16 or 17 clean sheets a season,
which is our
debut season is
that is
brilliant.
It's not bad at all.
I think Petr Cech in his debut season had something like 21 or 22 in the Premier League, and it looks as if in the last 8 games of the Premier League, Alisson could potentially
yeah
it's a shout. It is a big shout for. I think Alisson could do it with the way Liverpool are playing. I know they've been off the mark a little bit, but they've got a strong defence.
With Van Dijk behind them,
he's got that outrageous stat that he's not been dribbled past since March 2018,
which is unbelievable.
Which is mental,
He has to be. He has to be up there. I mean, yes, he didn't sign in the summer just gone, but he did sign in the winter transfer window. So he only played 4 months that season as a player. Now he's come into the team and he's literally the main stake player. Yeah. So.
What Klopp has done by taking the inconsistent players out and putting high quality players that he knows are going to perform, such as Alisson and Fabinho. And okay, Keita hasn't played a lot, but whenever he has come on and played, he's been that box to box midfielder that's brought the ball right forward. I think he's been incredibly smart in doing that because he's got that formula, that sort of counter attack, quick play that works. And he's just built upon that and solidified it.
And I agree with that because also Klopp likes to have a good relationship with his players, and you can see that on the pitch with the way they
Definitely.
The way they work and stuff. So
if there was any manager in the league that I'd want to play under, it's Klopp.
Yeah.
Because of that relationship he seems to have
with
his players. I think
he always seems to be one step ahead of the action. I mean, we've seen that with the transfer window, because he sort of, like with Keita, he made that signing before. And then he came in the summer,
yeah,
you know.
Effective signings,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. What about Tottenham? They done some good business, didn't they, in the summer?
That was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, wait, no.
Unreal.
Did they?
Ooh.
Well, that's a bit of
Don't
a
worry,
one.
We can cut that out.
Oh, sorry about that. Who's your worst signing of this season?
Yeah.
Well, I think Jorginho. Very, very, very controversial. But I think...
I don't think it is.
I hate the Sarri style of football. I think it's pointless when you've, in my opinion, one of the best holding midfielders in the world of Kante playing further forward. I think he's brilliant where he plays, but he fits Jorginho's position better. And the fact that Jorginho has got the most passes in a Premier League season and he's not got one assist, I think it's stupid. He doesn't do anything for the team. And I think Sarri's realised that recently by now taking him off a lot earlier than he would have done before.
The big thing, I don't think Jorginho's the problem at Chelsea.
No.
I mean, as a Chelsea fan, you know, I've seen a lot of different things.
But then I suppose sometimes when you're a Chelsea fan, you'd expect to be more against your team, wouldn't you? Because you can pick up on that. But I don't think Jorginho's a problem either.
No, I don't think Jorginho's a problem. I think the problem has been not being able to adapt the style of football to the players that you have.
The pace that they build up too slow. Really.
But it's not just Jorginho. I mean, it's not just Kante playing in the wrong position. You've got one of the best centre-backs in the league with Azpilicueta playing at right-back, which I think is the complete wrong position for him. I'd put him at the back as well. And I think that's why Chelsea's season hasn't been that good this year.
I would kind of agree with you on that. Since Azpilicueta's gone back to right-back, he's not been as good, but I think it's been down to other players. I think he's been one of our better players this season, but I would say players like David Luiz, he's had some really good games, but he's
hit
been
and miss,
massively,
oh,
yeah. massively inconsistent. Yeah, yeah. I think there was a stat during the first half of the season, he was the person who was at fault for most of the goals that we'd conceded.
He's too risky.
He is massively risky.
He likes to play out from the defence, and I don't think that always suits Chelsea's play style.
No,
completely.
Not always.
But I think that's the manager as well coming into that, isn't it? Because he likes to play from the back, because he just likes to build from the back. But
he's tried to move an Italian style of football.
Yeah. Straight away.
It's a trait of modern football that teams play out from the back, you know, because you sort of keep possession, can build the attack, you know, that sort of thing. But it doesn't always work, you know?
I feel like Jorginho would be playing better if we played with a back three with wing backs and him sitting in there so he can...
With Kante.
So he can play it out to the width and put his long balls... Because he's so good at putting the ball over the defence.
His passing ability is unbelievable. Yeah. The problem is, every other team in the league saw us after that 18-game winning streak and gone, right, okay, everything's going through Jorginho. If we close him down, we've closed the whole team down.
Yeah.
And that has been the problem. Mm-hmm. And sorry, hasn't changed it.
No. He's tried to stick to his guns to prove a point, but it's been the wrong point.
It has been. Yeah. And coming back to your point about Kante playing the wrong position, he may be playing the wrong position, but I honestly don't think he's been that bad. He's been one of the best goal-scoring midfielders this season, ironically. And the injury problems with players like Marco van Hinkel and Ruben Loftus-Cheek, who would probably adopt a more attacking centre midfield role, I think their injuries haven't massively helped us. And we've noticed that bringing in Kovacic on loan, Kovacic.
Mateo Kovacic.
he has no ability in the final third. Mm. Like, his passing and his dribbling is brilliant.
Yeah, his work
and his engine
around,
is brilliant.
I think this is the reason Real Madrid could let him go, because he was no help to Real Madrid with the players they had.
Yeah.
And if we're talking about Real Madrid, I think we could talk about some other transfers around the world. The fact they've lost Ronaldo.
Yeah,
and
that
now
has been
a massive mark off of what they
huge.
Were.
More than that.
I mean, they're 30 goals down from where they were last season. And that is all.
Which would probably be Ronaldo's goal tally.
It has to be, yeah.
They've just completely and utterly capitulated. And with the news that they've now got Zidane back.
Yeah, that's
for four times the money he was on.
Mental. Yeah.
And it does show as well with the whole Ronaldo thing. He's gone into the Juventus team and he is scoring goals there as well. So it shows that he was the catalyst at Real. He was
I think I could score goals in that Juve team. Like, the players they have around him
are
unbelievable.
Or one of the main things that I like being a Chelsea fan is seeing Courtois.
Oh,
so
I love it.
So Courtois about leaving, is so and he's gone bad to Real now. And he's flopped and he's letting in goals left, right and centre.
Absolute snake. Gets what he deserves.
Yeah, exactly. So he's gone from Atletico to Chelsea to Real.
Yeah, he went there because he wanted to win Champions Leagues and they're going to lose 4-1 to Ajax.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Yeah, literally.
So, Jack, what would you say your worst transfer of the Premier League has been this season?
I'd honestly say that I don't know if it would necessarily be worse, but definitely the most overhyped one would definitely be Fred going to Manchester United.
50+ million.
And he's barely played.
I think
he hasn't produced much.
He hasn't made an impact.
He hasn't adopted Wales as a style of play.
He
hasn't.
Not
at
all.
Weak for the league.
Yeah.
And I think with Manchester United's style of play, it's always been that little bit more physical. I mean, to be a replacement essentially for Fellaini now that Fellaini's gone, he's come into the team a bit more, but you've got players like Matic now who seem to be a much more dominant force in that position. And whenever Fred's come in, like for example in the 2-0 loss to Arsenal, Fred did absolutely nothing. And why he was the last midfielder he wasn't substituted off,
last
but why every other midfielder was substituted off, I don't understand why.
And
because Fred was arguably the worst performer out of all of them.
But On Twitter, I was having a look at a bloke called Statman Day, which I think a lot of people will know. He showed that Fred's in-game statistics in that game were the best out of any Man United player. But from a supporter looking on, I would have said Fred was the worst player on that pitch.
Yeah.
He must be doing something to be chosen two games in a row, PSG and Arsenal.
Injuries.
Everyone else is injured.
Play a part
look
in that.
Around.
I think Fred was very overrated coming from the first or second best team in the Ukraine League. I mean, there's like two teams everyone knows.
I mean, there have been some transfers from there that have been pretty good. For example, Douglas Costa, Willian was another one. But Fred did score an unbelievable free kick in last year's Champions League or Europa League, whatever it was. And I think Manchester United saw that and thought, he's a great technical player. Mm. And he's coming in, he's done absolutely nothing.
I just think he's too weak.
He has done absolutely nothing.
And also, I don't think they can make their mind up whether he's an attacking midfielder or a defensive midfielder.
And that's what, maybe it could be something down to what I said about being weak. Maybe they want to play in defensive, but he can't. So they've been trying to adapt him to an attacking midfielder so he can actually play balls through, maybe a replacement for Mata.
But the problem with that is they now seem to be playing like a diamond in midfield with Pogba either as a left attacking mid or the central attacking mid. And I don't think there's room for Fred in that sort of team because
there's
you've got players like Herrera who, when they played the diamond against Chelsea, was unbelievable.
Yeah.
He was brilliant.
Very strong.
And then Matic as the holding midfielder. And then Lingard coming in.
Because Pogba prefers to play in the central role, which is where essentially Fred should be playing.
You're
not going to replace Pogba.
Exactly.
There's no one in that team
to
replace him.
No, there really isn't.
I know we're on about worst transfers, but just looking on our list that we've got here, a very good sign that's been effective in the later part of this season is that Fabian Schär, the defender for Newcastle.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
That is a really good
screamer
shout.
The other
both
week.
He's
won goal of the month,
and,
didn't he?
Other cup leagues, he's been tearing it up, really. Mainly in an attacking sense, but...
Yeah, I know.
If we stay on the Newcastle front, yes, they haven't had the most amazing season, but some of their signings have been amazing. Like, I rate Dubravka, goalkeeper, up there as one of the best in the league. And then with the resurgence of Salomon Rondon, who's come from West Brom, and I think his technical ability and his strength and his pace with such a big bloke, he puts defences to tatters. I think he's been a very, very good signing for Newcastle.
I remember Alan Shearer on the most recent Match of the Day said something about the combination of Iosé Perez and Rondon is working so well.
Yeah.
Because you've got one person that's willing to hold up the ball in Rondon, and Iosé Perez, who I think is probably one of the most improved players this season. I never rated him. But now he seems to be that player that can run on and
in behind,
be a creative player, like Rashford's becoming.
Because Rondon's a bit slower, Perez doesn't mind doing all the running around whilst Rondon holds it up.
But so once Rondon's in the box, you have to be on him.
Yeah.
Because you know he will power a header in.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it's the work rate between them both that has probably been what's making them progress this season.
And getting someone like Miguel Almirón in, just in behind them, I think is an excellent signing, because he will be that another runaround player that looks to get beyond. Because
this is the only reason that Newcastle will stay up. As long as Rondon, Dubravka, Shah and Almirón, and that's four players, but they stay fit for the rest of the season, Newcastle will stay up. And I'll mark my words for that. I will say they will stay up due to that.
But they've improved massively, haven't they? Considering at the start of the season, they're relegation favourites, really.
Yeah. And now they're 13th in the league,
So, and I think they're a good, 12 points above or something? Something like that.
Having a quick look.
Oh, no, not 12, sorry. 12 from the bottom, really. So they're more than likely to stay up. And like you say, with the signings that they got,
they're
with the Almirón,
13th on 34 points. So they only need two more wins out of their last eight games to really be safe.
Yeah. And I've noticed as well on the whole Newcastle thing as well, Shelvey has been on the bench recently, and he's also a game changer that they can bring on. So they've sort of got subtle depth in their team now, which I think is helping them.
With Sean Longstaff now, with a knee injury out for the rest of the season. Yeah, and it's just gutting that he's had this knee injury now that's put him out for the rest of the year. But I hope to see Shelvey brought back in.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, last year we were talking about Shelvey going to the World Cup for England.
Yeah.
And he just hasn't played much this year. With the resurgence of Longstaff coming into this squad, he has completely changed the Newcastle way of
I think the biggest thing with Shelvey that worried Newcastle fans was the fact that he was so temperamental.
Yes, red card.
Sometimes he would have the best game, just unbelievable passing ability.
Yeah.
And then other games, you know,
completely
red
lose
card.
His head. Yeah, yeah.
I
don't know if it's just me that thinks this, though, but Newcastle have improved as the season's gone on, whilst the talk about Mike Ashley selling them and stuff has quietened down.
Yeah.
So do you that could have had an impact on the
players? I think that would have had a bit
more boost the morale.
Also,
you know,
there was the talk back in the January transfer window of Benitez potentially putting his own money into getting people in, because Mike Ashley was that stingy with his money.
But now he's taken them off the market, apparently, and he's willing to give them a little bit more money. So it's just something's changed. But it's quietened down now, and I think that's why Newcastle are improving. The players are sort of behind the team again now, if you know.
There's a lot more. They're allowed to do more on the pitch rather than off it, basically.
And Watford, this is their. If they carry on how they are now, this is their best season in the Premier League, and that could come down to players like Ben Foster and Gerard Deulofeu.
Gerard Deulofeu's only really recently come into good form. But
I mean, he is a boss. He's a Barcelona graduate.
Exactly.
So there's two of them in
there
the league that have stood out.
Definite talent.
And it's Gerard Deulofeu, and if we go down and say about Adama Traore, they are both Barcelona graduates from the academy team
who have
shone this season, helping both their teams to hopefully European places.
I mean,
they're both pushing for that.
Could well.
Watford are 7th and 8th.
And that just shows you.
Pushing for those spots. I mean, if they catch up Chelsea,
be a shock.
It would be a massive shock. It's currently a 13-point difference between Wolves and Chelsea.
And
so
Chelsea have got a game in hand as well.
Yeah.
So
if they, I think in terms of those two teams, if they were able to spend a bit more, upgrade them, upgrade their weaknesses,
it's just
going
depth,
into next
depth,
season,
isn't it?
I mean,
depth as well.
Wolves were very unlucky not to beat Chelsea the other day. You know.
Yeah.
Wolves have squad depth because of
they
the,
do. You're right.
The
you
European
know.
Allegiance that Wolves have. With the signs of Willy Bolly, they've got Raul Jimenez. I mean, they've got European Championship winning goalkeeper Rui Patricio.
And they've got Jean Moutinho,
Ruben Neves.
Yeah.
I mean, Ruben Neves, I think in Ruben Neves, he's going to be one of those players that in the future is going to be one of the world's best centre mids.
Oh, without a doubt.
I mean, what is he? He's 21 years old.
That's mad, isn't it?
Youngest ever captain for Porto in the Champions League.
He was their captain at 16, captained them in a Champions League game at 18. Like, that is just unbelievable.
Yeah. And like you say, he's only going to improve. So yeah, he's
absolutely.
Gonna...
He won't be at Wolves very long. I reckon another
season, and then he'll go.
I reckon someone like Man City is a replacement for Fernandinho, because he clearly doesn't have very long left. He'd fit perfectly.
No, I don't see that.
I agree with that.
No, I do as well.
Neves is a much more offensive ping around player.
Absolutely.
I'd love to see him come to Chelsea. Yeah. I would love to see him come to Chelsea.
That would be the sort of player you need,
to
be fair.
Yeah, he's like the Jorginho, isn't he? That we know that will make a bit more of a difference.
And also, boy, does he have a shot on him.
Yeah.
Never scored one goal inside the area.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I think every single goal.
Yeah, his whole time.
That's just a testament to his abilities, basically.
It really is. Are there any other like bad transfers that we think happened this season?
I'd argue Andre Schürrle at Fulham. Although not the biggest, signing of the season.
Definitely.
But I just think for the type of player he actually was, in the past and what he has been in sort of other leagues, he's come to Fulham and not really made much impact.
Game changers, isn't it, really?
Exactly.
He hasn't come there and changed their game.
I mean, there's a reason why Babel's come in his position.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Basically.
Yeah.
But I think the thing with Schürrle is having that Premier League experience, I think, was massive for Fulham because he did score quite a few goals at the start of the season, but he has dropped off. And I think bringing Babel in was a good thing.
I think
as long as they make it permanent.
Yeah.
Fulham's problem was spending over 100 million on players that have never really played in the Premier League before
and
expected them to improve. Whereas,
and then carrying on changing their team constantly.
Whereas Wolves have spent a bit of money. West Ham spent a bit of money. Like, I know that West Ham haven't just come up, but Cardiff has spent a bit of money and they haven't really, but they just haven't really done much anyway.
I think what they've done is they've bought in too many players.
Yeah, too many players.
Whereas other teams that we may see as struggling teams have put all their money in
quality players, like Wolves who came up. They put their money in quality players.
They kept Raul their Jimenez. Squad effectively the same as it was when they got promoted, whereas Fulham changed it from the team that got promoted, so they haven't gelled together.
They didn't change their style of football, Wolves, because they were the exact same in the Championship.
Yeah.
And they've come up now, and all they've done is improved a couple of players, like getting João Moutinho in and replacing Saiss and getting Raul Jimenez in, who have been absolutely unbelievable this season.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. They've adapted to the right areas, haven't they? And they've improved where they needed it, really.
Raul Jimenez has just equaled the goal-scoring record for a season for Wolves that was held by Stephen Fletcher. So it proves how good of a signing Raul Jimenez has been, that with 9 games left of the season, he's already equaled the record for goal-scoring.
Yeah, and he's just been so prominent for them, popping up at the right times.
All right, so I think if we move away from the Premier League now and we do go around the world.
Some world transfers.
Some of the world transfers were very weird in the summer.
It's very, very
weird.
We've
already touched on the Ronaldo topic with him moving to Juve for, I think one of the weirdest signings.
100 million
around
for Ronaldo,
wasn't it?
Something like that.
And he said that he wanted to go for a new challenge, which didn't go down well with some of the other big names in the world, did it?
I mean, come off it now, mate. It wasn't a new challenge.
They'd
You've gone to Juve.
Their league 7 years in a row.
Going to
Adding
a challenge
extra
would go
firepower.
To like Torino.
I mean, okay, the Serie A is definitely a more competitive league, but when you're going to a team that has completely dominated that league for the past 7 years, it's not a challenge, is
go
it?
Go to Sassuolo.
Exactly. See what you could
That's
do there.
That's a challenge.
That would be a challenge.
But so what other around-the-world transfers have there been that have been sort of big deals? I suppose it wasn't in the summer, but in January we had Morata go to Atletico because he just wasn't doing anything at Chelsea.
No.
We've got Courtois going to Real Madrid.
Which, I mean, was the complete wrong choice. But then
Chelsea brought in
a good replacement. I mean,
11 clean sheets this season, I think.
Yeah, new manager Kepa Arrizabalaga.
Yeah.
I butchered that there. Sorry about that.
I mean, to be fair, Kepa's done well. He hasn't done perfect.
No,
he's
absolutely
still got
not.
A lot to learn, but at least we know that if I know Chelsea aren't very good for it, but if he's a long-term replacement as the number one keeper, then he will improve.
I'm hoping he can be a similar player to like Cech was, because we brought Cech in quite young.
Yeah.
And he just went on to be arguably the best goalkeeper ever in the Premier League.
Yeah. He's definitely up there.
I mean, the most clean sheets in the Premier League era.
Yeah.
no one's ever going to break that record.
I don't reckon so. No. But if Kepa can be any even half
I guess,
of what
yeah.
Cech was at Chelsea, I think he will be brilliant.
Yeah, I agree.
I think another big signing was Vinicius Junior, the young Brazilian for Real Madrid.
Definitely.
I mean, he hasn't stepped into Ronaldo's shoes, but he's definitely
making
his mark.
He's shown like little bits of flair. I think he was described as having the technical ability of Cristiano Ronaldo whilst having the physical capabilities of Ronaldo Nazario. He's been compared to the both of them for his play style.
Which is a big...
Those are two big sets of boots that he has to try and fill. But he is probably the most promising young player in world football.
And replacing some of the players that he has done in the team in Real Madrid, then it does show that he has got the capabilities, and as long as people...
Absolutely. And the thing, he's been getting game time.
Yeah.
He's been getting game time over players like Isco and Bale. Like, that just shows the amount of technique and how good he is.
I think what it is nowadays as well is you got, like, obviously Mbappe that moved from, I know it wasn't this year, but moved from Monaco to Paris Saint-Germain. But managers are starting to believe in the younger players more.
Apart from Sarri.
But because they put a shift in and they are quality players. And they know that if they have a bad game, explain to them afterwards, take them off, and just they'll be learning from the experienced players in the team, basically, won't they? So they're just always going to improve because it's about the future now in football. It's about making the money.
Yeah. I think another big transfer, it wasn't an exact transfer, but an agreed transfer, was Frenkie de Jong going from Ajax to Barcelona.
Yeah.
And I think it showed why Barcelona are paying over 50 million for him in that Real Madrid game in the 100%. Champions League.
He absolutely ruined Modric.
Sent him to Tesco's for some
if
bread
Modric
and milk.
If Modric is the best player in the world.
PFA best player or something, didn't he?
Yeah. Winning the Ballon d'Or and then getting outplayed completely by a teenager.
Yeah.
I mean, it was not good enough for Modric.
He's just got like that little bit of quality you need in that.
But
in
then
those
again,
sort of games.
Modric getting Player of the Year was probably...
very controversial.
Yeah. That was probably the biggest
especially
snub.
Especially with Messi coming fifth.
Messi's had one of the best seasons ever. Obviously, there was the year 2012 where he scored, 91 calendar year goals, which is... that's never going to be broken.
No.
That is never going to be broken. But... yeah, for Frenkie de Jong to go to the Bernabeu and do what he did and be that influential player, you can see exactly why Barcelona are paying the big bucks for him.
You really can, yeah.
Definitely.
But then, sticking with Barcelona, they also got Kevin Prince Boateng in the January window.
Yeah.
Dodgy.
I don't understand that.
If I'm honest, I haven't really seen him like in the team. He's not a starter, is he?
I don't think he is, no.
And... which makes me think he's old. He's like 31 or... but he's over 30 and he's not going to add anything to this Barcelona team.
No.
Like...
I can't even see him getting a game, you know?
No, that's what I mean. Why have they brought him in? It's a very...
especially if you're
transfer.
Bringing in Frenkie de Jong.
Yeah.
He's definitely not... I think it's just been one of those panic buys.
Yeah.
They felt they needed a midfielder and they just got him.
Maybe they thought... Arturo Vidal wasn't doing much there, so maybe they just thought they'd try and just, like you say, panic buy, bring someone else in, see if he can change it. But
that still seems mental.
Yeah, it's a very confusing signing. But
yeah,
right. So moving on to transfer bans. There's been a lot of that recently, hasn't there? Especially with Chelsea recently. What do you think about that, Jack?
See, look, I can understand. I can understand why we've got the ban, because obviously we're buying all these players whilst having sent 42 of our own.
Yeah,
on
42.
Loan.
Yeah.
Most of them being English.
Yeah, I can understand why we've got it, but the thing that I don't understand with it is Chelsea did appeal to FIFA or UEFA, I think it might have been, and it only took 4 days for them to come back and say. No.
Sorry, lads, you're not
pushing this transfer ban back.
Yeah, but no.
But what I don't understand is why other clubs like Manchester City, Barcelona, Atletico, I think had one, and Real Madrid have all been allowed to push theirs back, but we haven't.
There has to be something going on. I think with Chelsea, it's the fact they've got 42 players out on loan.
I think
it's probably
down to
that. With all those players out of the way, I think Chelsea look worse. Because they're signing these players when they've got capable players already there.
It is true, but it, like, I know 42 is a lot of players, but like that's the whole point of the loan system, to send people out, give them experience and stuff. Like, Atletico and Real Madrid are obviously loaning players out too, but is it, there's been no necessarily interest in their thing, has there?
Okay, so would you call it like them buying, Chelsea buying for the future? Or would you say it's like, I don't know, like 2 or 3 years' time, you know, and not like in the distant future?
Well, quite a lot of the players that have gone out on loan from Chelsea are obviously very young. I mean, there's been a few players that have
like,
gone out.
What, like, is it Barber Rahman?
Yeah.
Barber
Rahman.
They've just sent him out on loan because they don't need him.
Yeah. So they're probably doing that to boost up his transfer.
And save on the wages.
Yeah, and save on the wages. But, I mean, there will be a stage where Chelsea will start bringing them in, but I think they just worry about what time to bring them in.
Yeah.
So it just looks worse than it is, maybe. I don't know. That's just from my opinion.
I mean, you know, Vinicius, Arnhem are going to struggle as well without...
Well,
know,
yeah, without
sending
us
all
giving
the players,
half of our
you know.
Youth system to him every year.
I've just found something on about the Chelsea transfer ban. The main reason they're looking into it is due to the signings of under-18s. And when you sign an under-18s player, you're not allowed to sign them for more than 3 years. But Chelsea have been cheating that by signing them and then not register them until a year and a half later.
That's got to be a lie.
I did not know that.
Which
did not know.
Now, the reason,
if that is the case.
The player they're looking at is Bertrand Traoré.
Oh, yeah.
So
he's now at Lyon.
Yeah, they signed him, and then in 2013, but didn't officially register him until January 2014.
Right.
In the strict league that it is, surely that's a difficult thing to do. So if they've done that, then that's a very...
Surely they were advised to do that, you'd think.
Yeah.
Because I know with players like Kurt Zouma, who we agreed a transfer with San Etienne, but I think they kept him for another 2 years
something,
after that.
Yeah, something.
And like then that. He came to us. I don't know if it was a situation like that.
Yeah, effectively.
But then, I mean, that happens a lot. You know, they buy a player and they loan him straight back for the rest of the season.
Pulisic,
like with Pulisic. Yeah, exactly.
But then again, then you've got Manchester City who, I mean, well, the company that owns, or the people that own Manchester City, own what, like 7 or 8 clubs around the world. I think they've just added one in Japan or something like that.
Yeah.
And they're just giving each other players, like Lampard when he was at City.
Yeah, I mean, in
going
my opinion,
to New York.
In being a Chelsea fan, I know I'm probably going to say this, but like you have Chelsea with their loans. Yeah. But PSG and effectively Man City that have come in, are coming into it recently. The FIFA Fair Play about spending their money on players. PSG, surely that's that
they spend absolutely ridiculous amounts
over
of money.
200 odd million on players. How's that fair? Do you know what
they
I mean?
Spent like so 200 million on
I
one player.
Think,
yeah.
I
exactly,
think
yeah.
PSG are cheating the system.
Yeah.
With the way that, due to the Mbappe transfer was held a year and a half back, due to they loaned him back to Monaco. I mean, that's the only reason PSG got away with that. Because, I mean, with two transfers nearly making 400 million altogether between Neymar and Mbappe, it's a massive, massive push for the FFP to actually into that.
Where does it come in? Because like it's like it, that just isn't fair to the other teams in the league, or is it not to do with the other teams in the league? Like, what, where does it come in?
PSG are never going to lose that league.
No,
so I think it needs to be sorted out, that league, because PSG are very far ahead.
Monaco,
they're
so
won
dominant
it a couple of years ago, but that's because they had their Fabinhos, their Bernardo Silvas, and stuff.
They had Falcao as well, didn't they? Yeah,
but now it's just PSG all over. Like, Lyon are a good squad, but then
they just simply don't have the money or the personnel to compete with
exactly.
PSG.
And
yeah.
they're another top club in that team, so that's what I mean about the fairness coming into that league.
Like, yeah.
It doesn't make sense to me.
There has to be a cap somewhere as to how much money you can spend in like a transfer window, because otherwise it's going to get too much, and football with money will just become too far.
Yeah, because yes, it's a business, but like you say, there definitely needs to be caps on things because there's just too much money going into it. Like you on about transfers earlier, there's been a clause for, I think it's Jordi Alba. His buyout clause is like $562 million plus.
I think Asensio at Real Madrid's got one of over $600 million.
Yeah,
I mean, so who's going to pay that?
Yeah,
no one is going to pay that. It's a way to make sure that with their quality players, they can't go without the club.
That's also limiting the player, though.
Yeah,
the player not being able to move.
Because I don't think Asensio's been playing that much for Real Madrid.
No,
it's nothing to do with
that amount of money.
It's nothing to do with the quality of the player. It's just mental.
Yeah,
you know?
It just shows the way the football's going. Because, like we say, Neymar, 200 odd million, and that's now. I wonder what it'd be like in 10 years' time.
We'll probably look back and be like, "Oh, that was nothing."
Yeah, that's probably why they've put that clause on it.
Who'd be the first billion-pound player? You know.
Yeah. Because the billionaire owners, they're just going to put their money into it so they get more money from them winning football.
Yeah.
All right, so if we're on the transfer bans section, we're talking about transfers in general, a team that are never going to break this transfer record would be Athletic Bilbao. And due to a weird clause they have going back to 1912, where they are only allowed to sign players from the Basque region, which is a tiny part of Spain where there's not many people living, but they can only sign players that live in that area of the country.
Yeah, and then they can only use their academy products as well.
Right.
That is mental.
Yeah.
And considering they're not a bad team.
No.
They've had some really good players over the years.
They've been in Europa League fairly consistently over the past 10 years. And to think that they've managed that whilst only having homegrown players.
That catchment area must be great.
Imagine Chelsea could do that.
I think that's where Kepa come from, wasn't it? Athletic.
You could be right.
I think there's only very few players in the Premier League. I think Ander Herrera is another
and
one.
And Emerick Laporte.
Yeah.
You've got two massive players there with Herrera and Laporte as coming from that system. But it means that if Bilbao ever wanted to sign any big players out around the world now,
they'd have to
you're
break
only looking
clause.
At a couple of players. Because their players like to stay there due to the whole academy thing.
Yeah, it is a good system because it's working.
I mean, it is clearly working.
Yeah, so it's just evident that if you can do it, then it should really be put into
if
play
they broke,
more.
Don't
I know
fix it.
In the English league, we have like, what is it, 5 homegrown players you need to have in your 23?
I think so. 23-man
squad,
like,
yeah.
But
it should be more.
It should be more. Like, we're in the English Premier League. I know we want the talent coming over from all around the world, but I also like seeing our English team, because now England are getting better and they're competing at the high level of internationals.
Now that we're putting more youth players into
it. Yeah. That same testament needs to sort of...
sentiment needs
to go there, you know, into the Premier League itself.
Yeah, exactly. And then they're going to start improving. Our country will start improving. And then the league will start just becoming a bit more attractive, really, for us English to watch it from being a home team. So that's the way that I feel about it. I think we should move on to the weekend's events.
Slightly more serious topics at hand.
Which isn't very ideal for football at all, is it really?
No. So if you don't know, over the weekend, Jack Grealish of Aston Villa was punched by a fan who ran onto the pitch in the Midlands derby. And he has been jailed for 14 weeks, I believe. And yeah, what do you guys make of it? Because I personally think this is absolutely disgraceful.
I mean, it's one thing them invading the pitch and attacking a player, but to do it in that vein of fashion, you know, to actually go and punch him in the back of the head, you know, it's just, that is serious.
Bad outside of the football pitch, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Like, would he do that outside? I mean, maybe he would, but, you know, on a global scale like that.
Say, running
you know.
Onto the pitch is one thing.
Yeah, that's now become a crime in itself.
Yeah,
but
approaching a player is another, and then hitting him from behind is another. And then going, while he was getting pushed off by the stewards, he was like celebrating and kissing to the fans and stuff. It's pathetic.
I think this could have ended up being a lot more serious.
14 weeks is too little.
Yeah. And he won't even serve that.
No,
probably.
Yeah,
so.
And what was it? He has to pay Grealish £100 in compensation.
Something like £100 for compensation.
Yeah, like I know Grealish has a lot of money, so that's not going to be much to him. So in my opinion, he doesn't really need that £100, but he should be sentenced to more as another punishment, because footballers don't really need that extra
I think
money,
the big
know?
Issue with this situation is that this man could have been carrying anything on him. I saw, for example, on Twitter, someone said he could even have had a pencil or a pen.
Yeah.
All he had to do is hit him in the neck, and that could kill him.
There was that issue the other week. Did you see, is it the Turkish league where
a player came out with
a razor blade? Yeah.
I mean, I went to the football the other day at Stamford Bridge, and when I got, they literally checked me put my arms out, and they literally just tapped me down a little bit. They didn't go anywhere below the waist, like down to the feet or anything where you could hold anything. They didn't search in your pockets or anything. And like you say, I could have had anything on me and run onto the pitch. And it's not exactly hard by how frequently it's happening now to get on the pitch.
Yeah.
So I just think it's the way that this has been happening. It's just foul.
If we talk about the Turkish league player, as a man of Mansur Kalar, played for Ahmedspor in the second division of Turkey.
Yeah.
He didn't just stab one player, he stabbed multiple players by slashing them across the face and legs with a razor blade.
That's just, how mental is that?
Yeah.
It's just profound, really, isn't it? It's just, why? What
was going through his head?
Yeah. What makes that happen?
I mean, going back to the Grealish one, it's just, you know, I mean, turkey's a different kettle of fish entirely, but yeah. In the English Premier
Turkish
League,
football's always been known for having violent rivalries.
Well, yeah. But you go back to sort of the, not Premier League, the Championship,
yeah,
and you just don't expect to see it.
Well,
you expect
your players to be protected from the stewards.
Exactly.
I know you can't expect everything, but that's that. But I mean, they're not necessarily going to be that scared, but like the football players and probably can be worried now because you can get attacked from behind. Like, he wasn't expecting that, Grealish. Anything could have happened. Plus, they're just there trying to do their job. I mean, I know there's rivalries in football and stuff, and you might not like a player, but attacking them is just ridiculous.
I mean,
ridiculous.
You know, if you work in Tesco's or something, you don't expect to be attacked over the desk.
Well,
do you?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
At the end of the day, Jack Grealish is just doing his job, going out and playing football.
Just because it's different to other people's jobs doesn't mean it's allowed. Like,
and although there's rivalry, that's no
that is no excuse.
No
for
excuse
for
exactly.
What
like
has happened.
That, like, I know that you, like. He didn't even, not that it would be good anyway, but he didn't even provoke them in any way before the game or during the game. It was only 9 minutes in.
Although I am very glad that he scored at the end. Let's just say that.
That was karma.
Yeah.
It was
so
karma.
If we talk about that,
exactly.
We're talking about him scoring and what happened after he scored. Is that he jumped into the crowd, which I know is wrong, but then he got like physically attacked
by the steward.
By the steward.
Who then got taken away by police. But the steward, who is there working for Birmingham, I believe.
Yeah, Birmingham.
And he's
then
need Jack Grealish in the back. He is there supposed to be protecting the player.
Yeah.
And there is video evidence of this.
So in my opinion, right, in terms of the whole situation as a whole, what would you say the punishments should be? It shouldn't necessarily be down to the club when it was the fan, I don't think, because that was just one mindless idiot that done it. But then when the steward, who actually works effectively for the club, he's doing it, then that's when it sort of creeps into the whole.
I think
should
I think,
the club get punished?
I think the club will get punished.
Pardon? I honestly think the club will get punished.
Yeah.
Not just for the steward, but for the fan running onto the pitch.
Yeah.
So the issue.
Are the stewards trained? I mean, is it? I know this is a case for some lower league clubs, but I'm not sure of the Championship. But this, they're not like sort of home in stewards. They're sort of provided by another company.
Yeah.
So
are they
sort of briefed on, well, look, this is a massive game for these two clubs. So you expect something like this, you know?
You effectively have to
be on your guard.
Yeah, you have to be there and protect everyone. Like the steward attacked a player. He should be protecting the player, not hitting him. So I think from that, the club possibly will get punished.
I definitely think Birmingham are going to get punished.
Yeah. There's got to be some sort of sanction.
There has to be some sort of sanction, some sort of fine, and I think there'll be a points deduction as well.
Yeah, people have been saying
that.
That's
it's not necessarily
I've seen.
The whole
I've seen
club's
the whole
fault.
Point deduction thing.
You have to look at it and say, you have to be punished as harshly as possible so that we can get rid of it from football.
Oh, they have to be held accountable.
Because that wasn't the only fan interaction over
the
weekend.
If we stay with that, though, with the whole point deduction thing, the only issue with that being is that I could go now to watch the Man United game and I could go sit in the away end. I could then run onto the pitch, pretend to be an away fan.
Yeah, but
that's the issue.
But that guy who got trialled, so they would have found out who he was, and you know what I mean? They've got so much information
about him,
so they'll know.
Not only that, but I think Manchester United would still be punished for that
because
of the fact that a player's run on. Well, on their pitch.
Yeah.
The stewards haven't done their job effectively.
Exactly.
Like, if, just say, I know it's older now, but like, effectively the, in quotation marks, a streaker.
Yeah.
That sort of, you know, you sort of laugh a little bit about it because they haven't interfered with players or effectively the game as such, because they normally do it when there's a break. But when you run onto the pitch in
mid-game,
order to intervene the game and attack a player.
Assault a player.
Yeah, that's when things come
in. That's the clear distinction you've got to make. There's a difference between entering the field and like just running around to be stupid and then
like,
actually attacking a player.
Like with the Chris Smalling one that also happened over the weekend.
Yeah.
The guy ran onto the pitch, squared up to Smalling, and then ran and celebrated with the players after was it Aubameyang's penalty?
Yeah.
Xhaka's goal, whichever one it was. At least with that, there was no, you know, altercation, shall we say.
I think he sort of pulled out effectively last minute because he realised how serious it could get, so he sort of tried to play it off.
Exactly, and then just went and celebrated.
Yeah.
But the Grealish one is just absolutely shocking.
I'd like to know everyone's thoughts, though, on what their opinion is on players reacting back to a fan. For example, yes. In the Jack Grealish location, Tammy Abraham did land a massive haymaker on top of the fan's head. So what would your thought be on that? Should Tammy Abraham be
punished? I didn't
see
that personally, but it's going to be a difficult one because it'll be like, well, you retaliated, you hit back, but it could be classed as self-defense. Like you say earlier on,
I reckon
before
that's
anyone
how it's
knew
gonna
it,
go.
Did he have? He didn't know if he had a weapon on him. Or anything.
Yeah, considering that's very true. Considering how
he's preventing anything else happening.
Exactly. Yeah, considering how well, considering what happened to Grealish, Tammy Abraham has to plea that is self-defense.
Yeah.
Because when you see what did happen to Grealish, when a fan now comes on and there is that fight, that altercation, especially from that game, Tammy Abraham is going to look at that and say, oh God, what are the fans going to do if they came towards me?
Yeah.
And like, ultimately, it did happen.
Like Lewis said, like about the Tesco thing, if someone come into your place of work and they started attacking you, you're not just going to let them.
You're going
to have to react.
You're going
to
defend yourself.
You're going to defend yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
So that obviously, if it was the other way around, just say Abraham or who punched him jumped into the crowd to celebrate something. Then a fan came up to him and then he punched him. Then without him, the fan doing it to him.
Yeah,
that'd be a different story.
Oh yeah,
but that
yeah.
was self defense. I mean, like I said, I didn't see it, but that would be self defense. So
there could still be a punishment or like a warning.
There could be an argument
like that
he did go way too far with that sort of self defense. That you could argue,
but I think he will be given leniency.
I hope he's given leniency towards it
because he is only protecting everyone. He's in his job. I mean, obviously, seeing retaliation in most circumstances, you're like, right, you could have just prevented that, just push him away sort of thing. But that was a little bit more serious. So, like, he probably got a bit of, protective in general. Like, just got a bit fired up maybe that's something stupid's happened. So he might still get a little bit of grief or whatever or trouble from the FA or whatever, but I still don't think that it should be so serious.
Definitely, yeah. So the final bit about the fights over the weekend, we have James Tavernier of Rangers, who had an altercation with a fan. But not as serious as the other two. However, there was contact between the fan and the player.
But wasn't there something to do in that game with also the managers as well, was it? At half-time or something, there was a coin thrown or something?
I saw something about it, yeah.
So that, I mean, obviously we can't brand it a different thing, but like, I think that's been, in terms of fan to players and managers, that's been a bit more frequent in the Scottish leagues.
Yeah,
Neil Lennon last season
had a coin thrown at him.
Which I'm not saying it's good, but like, I think it's a lot more of a regular
occurrence. There is a precedent for it happening,
So obviously it's a bad thing. But what did... I didn't actually see the incident, but what did James Tavernier do to protect himself?
So he pushed the fan away. The fan tried to kick the ball away from him.
Right.
And he pushed him. I mean, it was quite a big push, but then he's interfering with his job.
Yeah.
His place of work, so...
I agree with that, maybe, from what you said, but I feel that's when he needs to realise, right, I need to be professional now and not react in that way if it's only kicking the ball away.
Yeah.
A punch and... an altercation is a bit of a different thing, but just kicking the ball away, maybe he should just refrain himself and maybe, I don't know, it's a sticky situation, isn't it, really? Because you want him to be protected, but he shouldn't really...
He needs to act a bit more professionally that situation, yeah.
So it's a bit of a...
You wouldn't go into your place of work and if someone... So where I work, if someone pushed a DVD onto the floor, I'm not going to punch them in the face.
It's that context you really need, you know? Yeah. There's a line. Him doing his job, you know? Yeah. There's a line you can't cross.
Yeah. So it's one of them, really, but yeah.
Okay, I think that is everything for today's podcast.
Very
heated. Thank you all very much for listening. Hopefully next time we'll have a much lighter topic to talk about.
Yeah, hopefully so.
So hopefully we will see you then.